Hey everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned into the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most impactful tools within their success portfolio. Today, I'm joined by Jeremy Slate, host of the Create Your Own Life podcast and the founder of Command Your Brand. Through his podcast, he has learned from some of the highest performers in the world on how to stand out from the crowd and achieve incredible success. We'll explore how you can do the same to reach your own version of personal and branding success. Let's head on over to the interview. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to hang out today.
Me too, man. I'm really excited for this conversation because, you know, you focused on a topic in your book in terms of being in charge of what you're doing and not having a passive behind the scene observing approach to become an active creator in your own life. Are you able to expand on that and what's the importance behind making that shift, or what might prevent someone from being able to take command and take charge of, you know, their entrepreneurial dream or their life in general?
I think it goes back to responsibility, right? Like, I think if you look at it, a lot of us want to blame other people for what happens in our lives. We want to blame situations, whatever it may be. And if you look at it, though, you know, sometimes it may suck. Like, anything that good that happens to you is your responsibility. And anything bad that happens to you is also your responsibility. And I think when you look at it that way, you know, you may be responsible for the situation you're in, but you can do a lot to change it. And I think, to me, that's the biggest thing that a lot of people aren't able to handle, because they want to blame their parents for their problems, or their job for their problems, or whatever career they're in for their problems, when really you made a series of choices. Life may have happened, yes, but there's also the way that you respond to what life brings to you, right? You know, it's, you can have some terrible things happen, but how are you going to take those things and channel them for good? There's always something that you can find in a situation.
Yeah, I love that. And before we dive more deeply into the entrepreneurial story and your podcasting experience, because it goes back several years, you know, you're getting close to having a decade of podcast experience.
Wow.
But what's that?
That's wild.
It's insane. I mean, I think of, like, this show, I've started it in 2021, and, you know, I wasn't even really listening to podcasts until then. And it's such a craft that takes a long time to develop. And so we'll be excited to ask a little bit more about, you know, your viewpoint on that and why you recommend people get on podcasts as guests to promote their own business and their own expertise. But before we get to that, and before we get to that expertise on the brand creation and podcasting in general with you, we want to know what makes up your success portfolio. So if you're new to the show listening, let me give you just a quick background. It's an easy way to view it, in my opinion. You think of an investment portfolio that you have for financial goals. Just that compilation of all your investments that builds that financial future, financial freedom, gets you to retirement, gets you to do the things you want to do. Well, here on the Eric Mueller Show, I want to discover how successful people like Jeremy invest in themselves and build the foundation for their success. So Jeremy, start us off with this. What are some skills or traits, habits or mindsets that make up your success portfolio?
I think the first one is that I'm really willing to outwork any single person out there. And I think a lot of times hard work will beat talent any day of the week. You know, I'm not especially talented at anything, but I'm willing to, you know, work really hard. So I think that's one thing. Another thing that I think is actually really important is aptitude. And that's the ability to quickly apply what you learn. You know, I think having a high aptitude has helped me to really take a look at a lot of situations and act quickly in them. I would say another big skill for me. If I had to look at what else would it be? Like, I didn't have great conversational skills when I started this, but I think now that really benefits me. But I didn't start there. I really worked on that. I've also learned how to, you know, collaborate a lot better. I was not a great collaborator in the beginning, because I was an only child, and, you know, I was always used to doing things on my own and the way I want to do them. So I don't know, man. I would say aptitude is a big one, and I would say consistency and willing to work hard is a really big one. To me, those are the main things I have, because I'm not especially talented at anything. You know what I mean? It's just the only way I can think to put it.
No, yeah, that's stated very well. And I think that probably resonates with some people listening. And not that it's, you know, it's not a put down to say you're, you know, it's humble in essence to say you don't believe you're talented at anything, because you obviously have success from an objective standpoint to back that up. But if someone is listening and thinking that kind of that same thought process on, you know, what they view their own success to be, it kind of gets me to think what really is success? What's the definition? How do they define it? Because that's probably, you can kind of set your own target for that. So for you, Jeremy, what is your definition of success, and how maybe has that changed over time? You know, relating back to maybe when you started podcasting to, you know, starting Command Your Brand and being able to become kind of an authority in the space to help others. What really is success to you?
It's changed a lot since I've had kids. Like, my definition of success was a lot different before I had my two daughters. They're 2 and 4. And before that, I think it was kind of success for me was about money. It was being able to do whatever I want to do when I want to do it. And frankly, I look at it now as the ability to do what I want to do with who I want to do it with, and also create the best possible life for them, right? Like, if, you know, you're working hard to be able to create experiences and create a life. And when I look at it, my 4-year-old, you know, and there was even COVID in the middle there, right, where the world was shut down for a couple of years. She's been to 19 different countries and she's 4 years old. She has all this experience. She remembers a lot of it, which is incredible. And these are things that, because I've been, I guess, quote unquote, successful in what I do, these opportunities have happened. And I think if you don't have anybody to share it with, and if you don't have really a greater meaning to me, success really doesn't matter. But it's like, to me, it's changed a lot after having kids.
Yeah, and I'm not at that point in my life yet to know what that is like personally, but I'm certain people listening do have that feeling. And, you know, obviously your priorities change when you start a family, or possibly when you, you know, reach another stage in life, if that's, you know, career or personal, whatever that might be. But the definition of success really is that piece. I feel like you can kind of maybe control a little bit of that, kind of getting towards your book in terms of, you know, unremarkable to extraordinary, and how you can become that active controlling body in your own journey rather than a passive observer. Have you seen in your experience certain qualities in a person that predisposes them to be a little bit more likely to become an active participant in their journey? Or is there something that trying to tease out a little bit in terms of, you know, baseline, you know, actionable either qualities or steps that could be taken to do that and get to the next level if someone is literally just starting off in terms of a new endeavor?
Well, to me, it's really your approach, right? I think a lot of people, and it's tough, man, because I don't think anything really predisposes people. I think if you look at it, it's actually a hindrance to have, you know, natural ability and have things given to you. Because I'm going to explain it this way, right? If you look at the number one overall picks in the NFL that have actually been very good, there have not been many, right? It's, you know, you look at Joe Burrow and he's one of the few. There are very few, because you know why? Their whole life, they've been told they're pretty. They've been told they're good. They've been told they're talented. And you know what has to happen? Some people, you know, like, you know, Joe Burrow and people like him, you know, Peyton Manning was the number 2 pick. People like that haven't had to work that hard. And there's very few of them that are actually going to rise to the next level because of that. They have natural ability. They have natural skills. It's been nurtured in a way. But I think a really good example is if you look at somebody like Tom Brady, you know, love him or hate him, you look at Tom Brady, in my opinion, greatest quarterback in NFL history. He barely started his junior year of high school. He barely started his senior year of college and had to fight with Drew Henson for playing time at the University of Michigan because the coach he was going to play for left and he had to work with Lloyd Carr. Gets drafted in the 6th round by the New England Patriots, who have a $100 million starting quarterback, Drew Bledsoe, who almost dies in the field when Mo Lewis hits him. And then Tom Brady gets to take the field. So he's had all these things happen for him, and he sees his opportunities because he worked harder. He read the playbook more. He, you know, runs like he has a piano on his back. So he said, what can I do to get, you know, faster and quicker? And so he's always been somebody that's worked harder, because when that opportunity comes, he's going to take it. And I think if you look at that, somebody that's truly going to embrace adversity and embrace what life throws at you is somebody that's really going to win, man, because you never know when that opportunity is going to come to you. And you got to constantly be creating for when it does. Does that make sense? Like, I know I kind of went a little off the rails with that, but does it make sense to you?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And it made me think of, you know, another example, like Russell Wilson, I think, and this was actually created into somewhat of a joke because of his recent lack of success on the Broncos. But he was interviewed and you know, he said, if someone tells me to do 10 reps, like, I triple it and do 30. So it's like, yeah, it's like kind of in the 10X mindset, Grant Cardone's thing. Like, it's those types of things I feel like do work. And it's a pleasure to hear you say that, because, you know, hard work is kind of, we talked pre-interview and you shared that, you know, hard work really is kind of, that's the secret. There's not a fast track to get successful. And you actually have a background in powerlifting too. So you obviously know, you know, from a physical standpoint, you can't just all of a sudden go compete and powerlift and like be amazing. Anybody can think of that example and think, oh yeah, like I'm not going to go and be able to lift a crazy amount if I didn't train beforehand. How did you get into that? And how has that related to, you know, your next step of becoming a podcaster? Kind of briefly walk us through the timeline of those two endeavors.
So I've always kind of, fitness has always been a big part of my life. I was a wrestler in school. So, you know, weightlifting has always been a big thing for me. And people are always like, oh, like, how did you get so strong? And how did you do all these different things? Cause that, you know, I'm 5'7" and at my biggest, I was 215 pounds and 8% body fat. I'm 165 and like 10% body fat now. So I'm not as big as I used to be. But at the same time, people are always like, wow, how did you get so strong? And then I tell them one thing. It's called linear progression. Like, whoa, what does that mean? 5 pounds a week for 10 years. And you'll get there, man. 5 pounds a week for 10 years and you'll get there. So that's what it's about, man. There's no shortcut. It's how can I get a little bit stronger every single week? How can I get stronger, a little stronger every single month? And when you compound that, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year, that's how you get strong. And that's how I went from barely being able to lift the bar to benching 455. Like you don't start there, man. And to me, I think that's the ultimate example of what you can apply in entrepreneurship, in life, and a lot of different things is how can I get a little bit better week after week after week? And for me, that's something I've applied my entire life. And fitness has always been a huge part of keeping my mind right, keeping my body right, keeping performing right. But it was for me, I was, you know, more of like a, I did, you know, competitions here and there, but it was never something I was going to do my whole life. I went to school for, you know, Catholic theology and religious studies, believe it or not. And I actually ended up teaching at a high school for a couple of years. Well, was not super happy doing it. And in 2012, my mom ended up having a really bad stroke. It made me look at what I was doing in my life. And I'm like, do I really want to do this? I didn't know what the answer was. I tried a lot of different things. You know, I sold life insurance. I did in-home personal training, which I realized you should probably calculate gas mileage when you're going to people's houses because you're going to lose a lot of money on that. I sold life insurance. I sold products on Amazon. I did all these different things that didn't work. And I'd been a podcast fan since like 2009, man, like the early days of podcasting. So it was finally in 2015, I started the show I have now, the Create Your Own Life Show. We had 10,000 listens in our first month. It really took off and people started asking for help. And that's where our company came from. So it's like, you know, I was always looking at where can I improve? Where can I get a little bit better? Where can I work harder? And I've never been especially talented. I've never been, you know, especially gifted, but I will outwork you any day of the week.
Yeah. And I think that it's an important thing to note with podcasting, just the long form approach to it and the incremental, you know, like you just mentioned with the weight year over year over year, just improving and kind of seeing that linear, you know, progression without feeling like you need to go viral. And yes. I think there's probably some people listening that have an interest in starting their own podcast or possibly even being someone that could be a guest on a podcast. Maybe they don't want to run the show, but they do have an expertise and they want to share it. And I think the unique thing, your Create Your Own Life podcast, you know, as far as an award standpoint, you know, it's top 40 under 40 by Podcast Magazine last year, 2022. And it was also listed as the number one show by Inc. Magazine in 2019. So like when I read that, I thought that sounds really impressive. Were you expecting it to get to that point when you started the show? You mentioned 10,000 listens in a month to start it off. Do you attribute some of that to the timing, some of that to podcasting not being like maybe saturated, or what? I guess what were some things that you noticed worked early on for you that might help someone in the space now that wants to either start as a host or a guest?
I hate to say this, man, but a big part of it's timing, and everything I did in the beginning will help no one now. I hate to tell you that because, you know, when I started my podcast in 2015, there were 250,000 podcasts out there. There's like 3.5 million, you know, quickly closing in on 4 million. So there's a lot more shows out there. And also during that point in time, there was something called iTunes New and Noteworthy. You know, rest in peace, iTunes. That thing still exists in Apple Podcasts, but it has nowhere near as much influence as it was. Basically, what would happen is if you knew how to get enough traffic in your first couple of weeks, so like by getting people to review, getting people to subscribe, whatever you could do initially, then your podcast basically got tagged for New and Noteworthy and you get 8 weeks of free promotion. And that's how I built my early audience. And then I was able to grab some really great interviews and get those people to share it. Like episode 154 for me was Grant Cardone. And he, at that time, you know, he was big then, but he's huge now. So at that point in time, he was still like willing to put me on all his socials. You know, I was on Facebook, on Twitter, and all these different places. So we got a lot of traffic from there and the audience really grew from there.
Wow.
So like, yes, I was consistent. Yes, I was reaching. But at the same time, it was also a lot of timing, man. I think the space has changed a lot, you know, in 2023. But at the same time, I think there's still an ability to really be successful. You just have to be willing to commit to something for 6 months to a year and not have a monetary return from it. You know, it's the same thing when I talked about being able to, being willing to get 5 pounds stronger week after week after week. It's the same thing when it applies to this. How are you going to get a little bit better every week, and how are you going to get a little bit closer every week? And it's the people that are willing to put in the time and the work that are really going to see the payoff.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that hard work piece yet again, which I'm glad that that's coming up, because it does. I come from a competitive running, a distance running background, and that's another aspect of you
never
see.
Never get me to do that, man.
Well, never get me to do powerlifting. I can say that too, but it's just, it goes back to, you don't, you know, you see people perform, you don't see all the work that goes into it. So if you watch, you know, the Olympics, you see the race, and you see from a bird's eye view, it doesn't even look like they're going that fast in some of the races, which to me, it's like, they're going pretty fast. You just gotta know. But I like that the hard work aspect has been, regardless of timing, just a piece that really has served you well, has gotten you to the point you are. And it also brings me to the point now of, you know, kind of the topic of this episode, that the title that I wanted to put on this episode was about finding your passion instead of following your passion, and what the difference is behind that, and why you believe that it is a terrible idea to follow your passion for entrepreneurs or people that are chasing success. Could you expand on that, Jeremy, and share with us what you mean by that, and why we should take that to heart?
Well, I turned 36 recently, so I'm closing in on 40, and I think my generation has ruined the idea of following your passion. And here's why. Because they all think they're going to go to school for this incredible college major, and they're going to work in this career, and it's going to be incredible, and you're going to never feel like you worked a day in your life. And that's just pure BS. Because the way I look at it, everybody wants to follow their passion. You're chasing something you're never going to catch. You're just following this thing, right? And to me, that's a very passive process. You're following something, hoping to catch it. Well, the way I actually look at it is, it's finding your passion. And to me, that applies, it's an active process. You're doing something. And when you look at it, one of the biggest things missing in education that used to exist was this thing of apprenticeships. I'm not talking about an internship. I mean, an apprenticeship. They use them more in the trades and things like that now. But kind of, we're looking back towards, you know, pre-industrial revolution, when the education system really changed, and we kind of brought in this different way of educating. For that time period, you would have an apprenticeship. You would work in a career for a little bit. You see if you like it, you get some experience, and, you know, you would either stay or go. And what would happen is, you'd work a few apprenticeships. You'd decide if you were going to turn one of those apprenticeships into a career, and that's where you'd spend your life. What's happened now is, you spend way too much time, commitment, and money getting educated in something you may not do for the rest of your life, or, you know, even at all. And I really look at, you got to work at something, you got to try some things, you got to do some things. And I am a big believer in working at a bunch of different things, and maybe not even going to college if you don't need to. Because I think experience, you can either get some really good skills, and you can also discern, do I need to be doing this? And to me, you find something you're good at, you find something you enjoy, but you're not necessarily going to be passionate about it, right? Like, I wasn't necessarily passionate about a lot of things I started doing, but you're going to find, when you get really good at something, when you are able to produce something with little effort, you're going to get pretty darn passionate, right? You know, I love playing baseball. I absolutely love playing baseball, but you know what? I wasn't good enough where I was going to make money at it. And I really wasn't super passionate about it, because I never got to the level where, you know, things got effortless for me. And I think it's the same thing when you look at a lot of different things in your life. Like, you may be good at some things, you may enjoy some things, but is that something you can line up and make money with? Is that something you can get to the level where you can be the best at it? No. And to me, that's the way I really look at finding your passion. It's an active process. Try some things. Don't worry about screwing up, and don't worry about making mistakes, even though society says you're a bad person if you do. And that's how I really look at it, man.
Yeah, and that gets me to think of two points to target on this. And really, one of them is regarding timeline, and the other one is regarding, you know, just the approach in general. But you kind of spoke to earlier, you know, do something for 6 months without expecting a monetary return. Does that same timeline apply to if someone's starting to, you know, they found that they're passionate about something, and they're maybe doing it on the side while they're still working full time, making an income? Is there a time limit to that where you'd think you get to a point, it's not making money, and maybe it's not fulfilling you? You cut bait and try something different. Is there something, or how do you maybe standardize that, if possible?
I don't know if you can standardize that, man, because here's the thing you have to look at, right? Number one, I think you're correct. You should never start something new without a way to make money, right? Like, if you don't have something producing income, you're going to make really short-sighted decisions in whatever you're creating, you know, on the side. So I think starting while you have a job or while you have a career and creating something new is the best way to do it, frankly. But when you're looking at, because here's the tough part, right? the way I've always looked at it is I did a lot of different things that didn't work for me. And I looked at them and I said, is it me or is it the opportunity, right? Like, I made some money in network marketing, but I never took it next level because I didn't like the type of person I had to be in order to do really well with that, right? Like, you know, I had friends that would stop calling me like, dude, I'm not doing your thing. Stop it. Like, so you have to look at like, does this fit my personality, right? Like, if you hate people, I wouldn't be a public speaker, right? Like, so, you know, you could work on it forever. You're never going to get there if you hate human beings and you're a public speaker. So you have to look at, does this fit my natural abilities? Is it me or is it the opportunity, right? Like, is it something I'm doing or is it the thing I'm trying to do? And if it's, you know, like, hey, this opportunity isn't the right one. And, you know, you kind of look at other people that are doing that and it's not really working out for them. Then you say, okay, then maybe it is time to cut bait and try something else. It's, I wish I could say there's kind of a checklist you could go through, but that's the way I've always looked at it. Is it me or is it the opportunity? And does this, whatever I'm doing, actually fit my natural abilities? And if it doesn't, like, sure, you can get better at things, but like, you cannot force a person that hates human beings to be a public speaker. It's just not going to work.
Right. Yeah. And
then they may go the other way, and that could be really dangerous. We've seen that in history.
Yeah. And furthermore on that, kind of in regard to this, so that's the timeline piece. The approach piece, the thing that I started thinking about was actually kind of coining a piece of JLD, the host of Entrepreneurs on Fire, his book, The Common Path to Uncommon Success, which I highly recommend that for anyone listening or yourself, Jeremy, if you've not read that yet, I think it's a great one. But he kind of strikes the balance between finding something you're passionate about, but you also have like an expertise and you're skillful in. So I was curious to ask you about that. If you know, maybe someone is passionate about learning to play the guitar and they think, you know, they could maybe make money playing in coffee shops or who knows where it could go from then. But do they have, I mean, is it okay to start from a baseline skill set of zero? Or do you think people maybe are better off starting with evaluating where their kind of strengths are at this present moment, seeing if they can jumpstart that. And then maybe as they progress further along and they get more comfortable in terms of doing that, then maybe they go to the baseline zero skill set and try to do that route?
I don't know, man. It's kind of like, it's called internet marketing, right? Like, you haven't learned how to do this thing yet, but you're going to sell a course on how to do this thing. I'm just waiting on the Threads course to come out. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, there's right. So many people that are selling the dream they don't actually have. So to me, if I want to learn how to do something, I want to learn how to do something for somebody that's the best. So I don't know if starting at, you know, zero and you're going to teach something is the best way to do it, unless you're being open and honest with people and you're documenting that process. Now, that could be really interesting and a great way to create content, right? Like, this is me learning. This is me picking out my first guitar. These are the things I was looking at when I was picking out my first guitar. These are me learning to play my first notes 6 months later. These are me learning how to play Stairway to Heaven. You know what I mean? Like, that could be interesting. You know what I mean? But you have to be open and honest with where you are in the process. And I think, especially on the internet, there's too many people lying about where they actually are in their process and in their life. And because of that, I just think, you know, they're stealing people's hopes and dreams by trying to sell them something. That's my opinion. I know it's maybe a dark way to look at it, but that's my viewpoint on it.
No, yeah, I tend to agree with that too. And no one really wants to listen to a self-proclaimed expert on something that they don't really have an expertise in. That's not credible. You're probably not going to want to give them money, and B, it just kind of seems disingenuous. So yeah. I think it is helpful to do that, but it does.
It's been a whole week too. And I don't know how we don't have any Threads experts yet or a course on how to make $1 million on Threads. I was expecting it like at least 3 days ago, but anyway.
There's not a masterclass yet on how to do that? Is that?
I was expecting it, man. Like, I'm going to see Facebook ads all over. It was like when, you know, AI first started getting big, everybody was an AI expert, or when, you know, everybody, you know, is a crypto expert. And it's like, come on, man. You know, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. The ChatGPT, you know, with the ability to teach. And I what I really thought was interesting, Jeremy, was the people that kind of took that approach of walking you through like their journey of building something and, you know, really like partnering with ChatGPT and having them run the business. And it's like, they're the AI is the CEO and you're going to take the actions and do what they tell you. I thought that was really unique and interesting. And I thought, I was like, oh, that might be something to look into. And then I started looking and there's like, oh, there's thousands of people that are already doing that. And I thought I had found the one guy that did it. I'm like, I'll do my own unique thread of this, no pun intended there, but I would say, in terms of AI, do you think that there's anything that AI will prevent people from being able to do in terms of, you know, are there passions that exist today that might not be feasible in the future? I mean, people that are making money from something now, they might lose out on that going forward with AI and the developing of, you know, different ways that people leverage that technology.
So I actually watched an interview that Andrew Tate did with Patrick Bet-David. And I think he actually hit the nail right on the head with this. He said, you know, I think the people you're going to see struggling are artists and designers and creators. Like, those are actually people are going to be struggling. But at the same time, people that are still really damn good, you're not going to beat those people. Because the thing he was saying is, you know, there's killers and there's regular people. Killers meaning people that are really good at something. He's like, you need three regular people to equal one killer. And I said, he's like, regular people are gonna have to worry about their jobs. Killers are not gonna have to worry about their jobs, because what's gonna happen is they're gonna find ways to use AI to become stronger, become better, become more proficient, become more profitable. So I think that's what it comes down to, is the people that embrace this technology and learn how to be more efficient, more profitable, and better at what they do are the ones that are gonna win. It's the ones that are like, there was a lawyer that got disbarred recently because they tried to use ChatGPT to look at case law, and ChatGPT didn't know the answer, so it made up the case law, and they got laughed at court and got disbarred. So like, to me, that's somebody that got lazy and didn't, you know, learn how to use it the right way. But I think there's so much ability for those people that already work hard and already drive that can get better and kind of, you know, enhance their abilities out there.
Yeah, I think that's a piece that I knew when I was using ChatGPT, is always fact check it. Like with a baseline knowledge in pharmacy and drug and pharmacology, I could ask it a question and know for sure. I'm like, that what it just told me is not correct. Like, that is a lie. But it will be confident. It's kind of like that. It's that jack of all trades, but an ace of none. It's gonna sound confident to you, but if you don't look at it, yeah, like, I don't know the case law for, you know, I have some expertise in pharmacy law, but you can type in anything. It's gonna put out a convincing, well-written response, which is the scary part.
It's like that. It's like that old guy at the bar that thinks he knows everything about everything. He's like, I remember back in Vietnam. It's like, Bill, you didn't go to Vietnam. ChatGPT is kind of like that.
Right. And this kind of gets to, you know, kind of we teasing out the passion and how to find that to maybe be able to exit a full time job or find something that you're a little more, you know, ignited about in terms of making money and enjoying it. But looking at this company that you and your wife co-founded, the Command Your Brand, you know, that really focuses heavily on getting entrepreneurs and people that have a message to share onto podcasts like yourself and like, you know, potentially my show, to be able to share their message with the world and reach the right target audience. In your opinion, Jeremy, what do you think is the greatest benefit that an entrepreneur receives from appearing on a podcast? Is there something that could be applied as a broad statement, or is it, you know, it probably depends on the show and it depends on the expertise too?
Well, I would say there's kind of an overarching thing. Like, number one is, you know, more confidence in your message. That's a really big thing. Like, the more you have to talk about what you do, the better and stronger your positions become, because you have to defend them and you have to learn how to talk about them better and communicate on them better. Like, I speak in front of a lot of large audiences now, you know, at live events and stuff like that. I could not do that when I started doing this. So like, that's one thing I gained. That's an ability I've gained from podcasting. Another thing I would say is brand positioning, because you're going to be the most successful when you actually niche down the podcast you're going on, because you become seen as a celebrity within a niche and you really start to gain credibility for what you're talking about. So that's huge as well. And at the same time, other media, if you're doing an interview, it's like, 5 minutes is considered a long time if you're doing a media spot. Podcast, you're 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour. Like, you really get to flesh things out and really tell a story and really connect with people. And you can't do that anywhere else but on a podcast. And I think that's why traditional media has actually really struggled to do a lot with podcasting, because they just don't get it. They don't get it. They're used to the way that, all right, so we're going to create, you know, 25 clips to fill this hour. This one's 4 minutes. This one's 6 minutes. All right, we've got a commercial here. Like, it's just not the same. And people have to really be able to hold a conversation for a significant amount of time that's inspiring and interesting and able to teach others. And if you can't, you're not going to do so well, man.
Yeah, I think that's a super important point. And it gets me to, you know, just think about podcasting in general, at least from my opinion. There's a lot of myths out there about how to be successful with it. And you've shown, obviously, with your long tenured approach to it, that I believe really is the only way to be successful. Is there a myth that you've heard that you want to debunk on the show about podcasting, or maybe even about brand creation, that you just want people out here to know that is absolutely not true, and I'm here to tell you?
I think everybody thinks that they're Joe Rogan and they're going to have the conversations that they have with their friends all the time and turn into a podcast. And frankly, most people don't want to listen to that because they don't know who you are. I think that's one part of it. But I think the other part too, there's this idea and this myth that you're going to build this big podcast and make a lot of money off advertising and stuff like that. And for, you know, less than 1% of people, yes, that's true. You know, I have a sizable podcast. It's done really well. I don't make a ton of money off of advertising. I do on YouTube, but I don't make a ton of money off of advertising. So you have to look at how can I build this thing into my business or build this thing into the project I want to create and use it as, you know, networking or lead generation or a trust creating thing or a way to connect with people that I wouldn't be able to connect with. Like, it's an incredible tool if you can learn the right usage for it. But a lot of people think it's this thing, they're going to get it big and everybody's going to subscribe to it and they're going to have all this, you know, advertising money. And for most people, that's just not the case.
Yeah, I think that's another guest of mine, Jordan Harbinger, who's got the Jordan Harbinger Show. He's kind of one of the, I consider one of the OGs in podcasting too from a long time back. But he basically said the same thing as far as, you know, a myth. It's like, you're not going to make a lot of money podcasting. And same thread. It's like less than 1% and whatnot. But it makes me think more about how, and it's kind of the opposite of what I did with my show, is that my vision was, let's create a personal brand. Let's start it with something like a podcast and see if we can build things off of that. Maybe it'll eventually mold and create something different from it. But a lot of times you see someone that has an existing business or an existing product, they create a podcast beneath that to like advertise and market that. If someone is about to just embark on an entrepreneurial journey and they have an idea, they've got a niche, would you advise them against going the route that maybe I have with starting the podcast first? Or is it an okay route to do if you're just doing it from a personal branding standpoint?
So I can't disagree with you. And the reason would be, is I'd be lying if I was, because I did exactly what you've done. Like, I started with a podcast when I had absolutely nothing. And I think you have to have the right expectations, right? You have to have the right expectations as I'm going to use this in education. I'm going to keep, you know, working on my skill and finding out where the opportunity is, but you have to have the right viewpoint. I think a lot of people start it with that viewpoint and they're like, All right. Month three, I'm going to make $10,000 in advertising. Month four, it's going to be like 30. Month five, it's going to be 50,000 a month. So you have to have the right expectations going into it. And dude, I didn't make money off podcasting for like the first year and a half.
Right.
And so you have to have the right expectations going into it. And if you do, then start it, build a personal brand, connect with people. Like, it's one of the easiest ways to do that, but just have the right expectations. That's all.
Yeah. Be realistic, but also be ambitious, right? And be hopeful.
Absolutely.
Without, you know, it's not like you have to have the glass half empty viewpoint, but just make sure that you temper the expectations initially, because you never know what it might become. I think your show is a perfect example of that. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, timing is kind of a piece of it. You can't control that, but there are other steps that you can, you know, mold. And right now you mentioned in pre-interview that YouTube is really, you know, an avenue that podcasters can kind of differentiate themselves and get video content. And, you know, I think that is getting, you're fighting for people's attention. And it's a much easier for someone to pull up TikTok and watch a 15-second video then listen to a 35-minute, you know, educational conversation. And Jeremy, as we kind of get closer to closing down the interview, I want to ask you a little bit more about your book, The Unremarkable to Extraordinary, you know, overarching theme of how to do that and how to become that active participant. If you had to say the main takeaway of that book without giving it away, and we'll tag in the show notes the ability for the customer to buy it, but what would you say is the main takeaway, or if someone is, you know, the call to action for why this book is necessary if you want to become an active member of your life's journey?
Because I hate personal development. I think personal development is BS and it lies to most people. And then, you know, telling yourself you're going to be successful 25 times in the mirror is not going to do it. So this book is, you know, real life experience from people that have applied things, they've failed at things, they've won at things, and they've become the best at what they do. And I think, frankly, that experience and other people's experience is the best teacher. So for me, that's why I think this is a book everybody should read, because you're getting life experience from one of the only three people ever to win the Indy 500 four times, a former CIA director, a World Series champion, like some incredibly successful people that have made hundreds, if not thousands, of mistakes, but they hit a couple home runs in their life. And there is so much to learn from that experience. And I think that's way more valuable than any other personal development book out there.
Yeah. And I'll just piggyback off that and just share just from the chapter heading in the done is better than perfect in chapter five. That really, for me, that really struck home with me. I had a previous guest, Ben Whiting, share that. And I think of that sometimes when I'm either creating a podcast or learning a new, you know, skill, or just trying to do something for, you know, even just a, you know, a job task. It's like, done is better than perfect. I mean, if you don't get it done at all, you've not accomplished it. And perfect is also like kind of a subjective definition, because no one's can't actually do anything perfectly. You could always improve. And so Jeremy, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing this expertise. And we'll tag in the show notes your book and your website and your media company and your podcast. But if someone wants to reach out to you and connect personally, is there a best way to do that?
Well, I think, frankly, the best way is to go out and grab the book. And then there's a lot of opportunities to connect with me and get into my world by doing that. So if they head over to getextraordinarybook.com, there is a cool offer there, too, with a special members-only program I created that's part of the book as well. So that's getextraordinarybook.com.
Perfect. We'll send them over that way. And yeah, Jeremy Slater, really can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. We'll look forward to following your journey. And until next time.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.